WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
And welcome to WrestleSpective. I am Jason Mann. Before I begin, I want to tell you a little bit about our sponsors. First of all, we have RudoReels.com, which is a great website that includes professional wrestling from Mexico, Japan, the United States. Pretty much anywhere in which they have professional wrestling, you can get it there. It's great for DVDs and downloads. That's RudoReels.com. And our other sponsor is GredunzaPress.com, which is the host of this and many other fine podcasts. Also offers website services, very affordable rates, a nice personal touch run by my friend Kasoria Paul of International Object. So if you're looking to start your own website or start your own podcast, check out GredunzaPress.com. And my guest today, for the very first time, She's one of the new writers at the wrestling blog, and she also writes the best and worst of TNA Impact for withleather.com. Danielle Matheson, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Glad to have you here, and we are going to be talking about they're always interesting matches. I feel like every time I say we talk about the match, I'm going to say it's an interesting match, and this is without a doubt also an interesting one. It is the main event of ECW Guiltiest Charge 2000, ECW champion Mike Awesome taking on Spike Dudley. So you picked this match. I gave you a list of matches. I have this master list that I give to people who I want to be guests, and you selected this one. So tell me why you selected this one.
Mostly probably because all of the Royal Rumbles were taken. If there's one thing I'm, I guess, near fanatical about, it's probably early Royal Rumbles, like anywhere from probably 88 to 91, 89 to 91, you're kind of hard-pressed to find my favorite. But yeah, since those were gone, it kind of made sense to pick a match that, you know, I've watched about a million times and that I actually really love. Plus, also too, I really enjoy ECW, but they don't have much of a history of putting some of their best or most notable matches as the main event. So given that this one did actually main event and is one of my favorites, it kind of became pretty easy as soon as I saw it.
There you go. And you seem to have a real affinity for Spike Dudley. So why is Spike a character or a performer or whatever that connects with you?
I have a wrestling taste that kind of runs the gamut, but it really just comes down to the fact that he's just so little. Like, I mean, I like great big hoss types, and I like the other end of the spectrum. Like, if you are tiny and you're getting the crap kicked out of you, I'm probably going to root for you.
Yeah. I see. For me, although I didn't find it to be true in this match, there are a lot of underdog versus giant matches that I just can't get into because the size difference is literally so stark that I can't believe it. But here I did feel like they did a pretty good job of keeping everything that Spike did to Mike Awesome, Spike and Mike. I feel like they did a pretty good job of making everything that he did to him believable and, you know, reasonably plausible, of course, within the physics of professional wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the whole David and Goliath type match, it's very easy to take a safe route. And sometimes a lot of those matches will just fall into the trap of being the same thing over and over. Like, if you look at something, or someone like Gregory Iron, you know, for those who don't know, Gregory Iron is, you know, he's the handicapped hero. He's wrestled all over the place. I guess for a lot of people listening, probably most notably in Shikara. He wrestled, I believe it was Sarah Del Rey at the High Noon pay-per-view. I know that one exposed a lot of people to Shikara, so I guess we'll go with that. But given that he has cerebral palsy, he always ends up falling into that same kind of booking, that David versus Goliath booking, where, you know, he has this wrestling talent and he has a lot of personality, but it's just the easiest route to take. Right now he's doing some great work in AIW in Cleveland, where he actually kind of gets to step out of that zone. And instead of being, you know, the handicapped hero and, you know, being this role model for people to look up to, he actually gets to be a heel, which, you know, for a lot of the things that AIW does well and a lot of things that they don't do well, I'd say this is probably one of the things that they are doing fantastically. Because as soon as you get to step out of that David versus Goliath model, when you are smaller or you have something kind of working against you, then it can turn into something great. And there it has. With Spike Dudley, again, you could fall into that same kind of trap, but as you and I were talking about before, the creative genius of Paul Heyman, he allowed him to have enough of a personality, and he went through, I think, enough changes, even in ECW, or just even in the course of his career from ECW, that he could play up different facets of his personality and be put into different storylines where it just wasn't, oh, I'm so tiny and I'm getting beat up by this great big douchebag, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, I think we get into that a little bit later, especially talking about both these guys after their time in ECW, because they both definitely took some interesting career turns, and Spike especially, you know, you're right, that underdog thing can be short-lived, and he kind of had to branch out of that, and they did some interesting things to at least try to do that with Spike, for sure. Yeah, I mean, he was definitely, you know, he obviously had parallels to the Mikey Whipwreck character from, you know, about 4 years before this, which was one of the first, you know, kind of breakout ECW characters, perhaps in the 95 and 96 in particular, and just sort of the underdog who, you know, gets beaten up a lot, but keeps fighting and, you know, is occasionally able to, you know, pull out the big victory. He had a notable feud with Bam Bam Bigelow toward the end of Bigelow's run in ECW. That was part of that. And they, Bigelow and Rey Mysterio kind of did a similar thing in WCW. So I don't know, for me, for Spike a little bit here, I find myself not as sympathetic with Spike as I feel like I should be. And maybe it's just because, like, his facial expressions to me are a little, maybe maniacal almost. And I feel like I don't, like, I feel like I don't sympathize with him as much as I should. And I don't know. I feel that they're a little goofy. Shawn Michaels does kind of the same thing, where, like, he has, like, his facial expressions are so exaggerated and so kind of silly that sometimes it takes me out of, like, what he's trying to do.
Yeah, I can see that.
But yeah, so Spike, you know, he had been around for a couple years, probably, I think, close to 3 or 4 years in ECW. Started off, you know, among the Dudley stable. I learned today that Spike's full name is Little Spike Dudley for LSD.
Mm-hmm.
And then the acid drop. So, he, of course, the Dudley's characters were all the ideas that they were all, you know, different fathers who were, you know, pro wrestling characters, and they all had, you know, different, they were all kind of different archetypes. You know, Bubba Ray was a hillbilly, you know, Devon was from the streets, you know, that kind of thing. So, and Mike Awesome. So, like, I was thinking today of who Mike Awesome reminds me of, and I feel like Mike Awesome is like 70% of Brock Lesnar.
See, to me, Mike Awesome seems just like any gym teacher that you can imagine, just buffed right out.
Right, but I mean, he's so athletic and he's bulky and he's, you know, and he's fearsome, but he's like 70% of all those things of Brock Lesnar. And then you add like the mullet and you subtract more personality. Right, you know, I feel like that's kind of where Mike Awesome is a little bit. But he and Masato Tanaka, right before this, basically the couple of ECW on TNN shows that were that were right before this had been trading the world title and had just had a bunch of matches in a row that were really critically lauded at the time, were really brutal and hard hitting and lots of chair shots to the head and lots of, you know,
lots of tables,
lots of big power bombs, lots of, you know, nobody selling nothing, that kind of thing. And I, you know, they were really critically lauded at the time. I kind of feel like, you know, with the understanding of concussions and the understanding of, you know, and other things, I feel like, you know, that praise would be much more reserved today. But they definitely were, you know, something people were talking about at the time. And I think Awesome had the reputation as a pretty great wrestler. But again, I think that, you know, this is at least my mindset or kind of my sense of what it was at the time versus what it is today is more people were focused on like if you did great high impact intense moves, you were a great wrestler, and the other stuff that was important, like telling a story or, you know, facial expressions or conveying personality and those things that make, you know, a more complete wrestler, were less talked about in general internet wrestling community conversations, that at least that I was seeing at the time from my, you know, 14-year-old memory, 13-year-old memory. So,
yeah, well, I might kind of disagree with you on the Brock Lesnar thing, just to rewind a little.
Okay, sure.
Just because Brock Lesnar's mobility is perhaps not the greatest.
You don't think so?
I don't know. I think I'd like him more to like a turtle than maybe Mike Awesome. But I think Mike Awesome definitely has the edge on him when it comes to mobility and the things that he can actually do. Like, once we start actually getting into the match, like, I don't see Brock Lesnar as the type who's going to throw someone over the shoulder, climb up to the top rope like it's nothing, and then just kind of, you know, heave them off. That's not really what I think of when I think of Brock Lesnar. Like, Brock Lesnar obviously has a lot of strength and can do a lot of power moves. I think of his offense as being a little more low to the ground than someone like Mike Awesome. Like, he's not going to go for those, you know, big spots off the top rope. He's not going to, you know, launch himself into the crowd. I will also point out that I don't exactly have the highest opinion of Brock Lesnar. I'm sorry if we disagree, but just to get back to that, I would slightly disagree with that. Mike Awesome versus Masato Tanaka is something, you know, when I started getting really into ECW, was something that I was kind of weaned in on. So, you know, it came in with a lot of Super Crazy versus Tajiri, which is one of my favorite things. I love Masato Tanaka versus Mike Awesome. I would agree that the storytelling is perhaps not the greatest, not something I would look for necessarily in other matches, because that's something that I really do take to heart. Like, obviously, we're not going to get something like a Dynamite Kid versus Tiger Mask situation. But as far as just, you know, brutal power moves and just a total hoss fight, then if you're looking for something like that, then I think it's absolutely the perfect thing to come into. One of my favorite things about Masato Tanaka, besides the fact that he looks like a giant overgrown baby from like a Studio Ghibli promotion, is that out of all of the things that he does in those matches, like, you watch these two like huge hoss men just going at each other, and they're just, you know, brutalizing each other, they're throwing each other through tables, they're just, you know, whipping each other around the ring, around the arena, and then his finisher, a roaring elbow.
Well, it's a hard elbow, you know?
It just seems so counterintuitive to everything that he's doing. Like, I mean, Obviously it's going to look a lot more powerful than, you know, Wade Barrett kind of like rubbing his shoulder into your face or like rubbing his armpit all over your face.
Right. But
just out of all of the things they do, all of the power bombs, the suplexes, and, you know, literally picking each other up and throwing each other around, just spinning around and, you know, kind of whiffing him with your elbow. I don't know, something that's always kind of amused me from those things.
Yeah, well, it's sort of like the palm strikes or like, or even like Big Show's punch. It's like, it, you know, like you can see where that would be sort of like effective, but just it's not as impressive, so it doesn't seem as powerful.
I don't think I would want to get punched by Big Show.
Well, I don't think I would want to either, but I feel like getting choke slammed would be slamming my whole body into the ground and that kind of thing, and that would be worse. You know? So yeah, ECW at the time, of course, you know, was always losing a lot of their best and most notable performers to WWE and WCW, but they'd been hit especially hard in late 99. They'd lost Taz, who'd been their champion for most of that year. They had lost the two main Dudleys, who Spike had been feuding with for most of 99 after breaking away from that group. And so... ECW was trying, you know, was building up kind of some new characters to put in main events. Mike Awesome and Tanaka kind of being among those as well. And then they would try that more in 2000 with guys like Rhino and Just Incredible and Steve Corino and so forth. So ECW was definitely a transition period. You could tell that the losing, you know, they had an incredible ability to create new attractions and to get the most out of the guys that they had, but it was starting to get to the point where you could tell that, you know, the crop of guys, they had some talent, but they were definitely weaker and less seasoned, and the promotions, you know, best days were mostly, you know, getting to be behind it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can't exactly live on Tommy Dreamer alone.
No.
Yeah, no, I would absolutely agree. I think there are a lot of different things going on. I mean, even, and like you said, we'll talk about Mike Awesome a little later on, but you kind of can't blame them at this point, because when you start, you know, reading more or learning more about it, and you really get into kind of the nitty-gritty of exactly how Paul Heyman was running things and how people were not getting paid, you know, you look at the spots that they're doing, you look at, I mean, exactly how many tables do they go through during a show or doing a pay-per-view? How much blood do these people lose? Like, is that really something that is going to become worth it in the end? Is this something that, you know, a lot of these people who had been here for years, who are starting to, you know, start families or starting to think about the future, or I would hope would start thinking about the future, you know, that's not exactly something people can live on. People can't live on, you know, adulation from the crowd. So, of course, moving on to something like WCW or like WWE, just even for a steady paycheck, starts to make a lot more sense, even if you kind of lose that, I guess, magic of the ECW crowd or the ECW audience, or even like the variation or the freedom that you get with a character. You know, those are really great things, but at the end of the day, if you're not going to get paid, then why wouldn't you move on?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And yeah, it's pretty amazing to think at this point we're like 14 months away from ECW and WCW not existing anymore. I mean, and I don't think anyone, you know, I think people knew that obviously WCW had major issues and ECW had, you know, was clearly having some issues, but I don't think anyone, you know, could have seen that coming, especially the heights that, you know, that wrestling had just reached as far as mainstream popularity. So let's get to the match.
Okay.
The build up directly to it, and I could not find this on the internet. I don't know.
No, it is impossible to find. I have been searching for a week, and I mean, it is just as hard to find the name of Spike Dudley's girlfriend as it is to find the actual, you know, precedent for this match.
Yeah, because he beats up, it was described in the recap that I read as a female Spike fan, but it's actually supposed to be his girlfriend.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, well, I've always seen it referred to as Spike Dudley's girlfriend. I know I've seen it before, because it was on an episode of Hardcore TV.
Right.
It is somewhere in this apartment on VHS tape, which might be harder to find than actually finding it on the internet. So as far as that prep work goes, I was not able to find it. So if I'm listening, you know, wants to direct us to a place on the internet, that would be fantastic, because I would still like to see it even after all this is wrapped up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Also, I don't go through piles and piles of movie.
I was curious myself, because that seems to be kind of the major angle, you know, to set it up, because that was pretty much immediately. I think that was even before the Tanaka and also the two, you know, TV matches they did where they traded the titles. But so Spike's the video that I watched began with Spike in the ring. He's angry. Chastise is awesome for beating up women, which I didn't understand that reference until I realized later that he had, you know, beat up Spike's girlfriend. Says that he makes his goddamn living going through tables and beating people up, and uses some other foul words that I will not repeat to describe Mike Awesome, and tells him to get out there.
Yeah, I think one of the real shames about watching this match, I guess not actually from the pay-per-view, is when WWE puts it out, obviously they cut out Spike's entrance probably just so they don't have to deal with any licensing issues from AEW, but also when he comes out, he obviously angry and doing his, like, you know, lip jutted out, you know, stern little walk to the ring. He's walking around, he's looking under the ring to pull out tables, and then he grabs someone from the side of the ring just to actually help him get out all these tables. So all the tables you see set up, you actually get to see him with help, obviously, because he's so tiny, just set those up everywhere, and kind of that, you know, you get that almost Sabu sense that, oh, you're setting up a table, you're going to go through that. Because, I mean, really, has Sabu ever set up a table in his career that he didn't end up going through?
Right.
But it's kind of one of those things. So then, you know, he gets in the ring and, you know, does this. I loved what he said. That is one of my favorite things to say. When I dressed up as Spike Dudley for Halloween 2 years ago, you know, it took a lot of practice, you know, sticking at the lip and doing the walk and kind of walking around my apartment saying that, which may kind of betray me as a little bit of a loser sometimes, but it is something that I really love. But yeah, so he calls him a big goofy moron and says some words we probably shouldn't, and yeah, and that brings out the judge and Mike Awesome looking larger than life, which is fantastic.
Yeah. So, Judge Jeff Jones, please explain that to me.
I was hoping you could explain it to me. He is not someone that I pursued any interest in whatsoever. Like, I looked up some of his career just online, and there's not a whole lot going on for that fellow. I know someone on Twitter messaged us to talk about how awesome he was, so maybe that's the guy to ask, because I had zero interest in this fellow whatsoever. I was there for Mike Awesome. That's all I wanted to see, just sweaty fellow with earrings, get out of the way. You are not needed.
He was wearing a judge's robe, which I appreciate at least.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good, you know, commitment, but it's still
right. But yeah, I don't feel like I don't get where the brilliance. I'm sure maybe there is, and I just haven't seen it. Well, I'm not sure of that, but I'm going to you know, guess that for the sake of the judge Jeff Jones fan. I believe that's Lita's baby that tweeted us that one. And just go ahead and assume that. But yeah, ECW seemed to have a lot of managers like that who sort of, like, didn't really seem to add much. Like Jason, like, you know, he didn't really seem to do a whole lot. For whatever reason, most of the ECW managers who weren't women didn't really connect with me.
I don't really think they connected with anyone, especially when you're, you know, up against the ladies of ECW.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Who are all personable and all, you know, and we're all, from what I can remember, pretty good. So, so right away, Spike tries to attack Mike Awesome, which is not successful at all. Awesome presses Spike while still having the belt around his waist and tosses him outside onto a table.
Of course.
Then he tosses off his belt and he makes the come on hands signal as Spike is trying to crawl back into the ring, clearly in pain. And then Spike crawls in and Awesome tosses him into another. I'm not sure if the first one was a double table, but I believe the second one was a double table. So There's a big ECW chant. Joey Styles, who is joined by Cyrus the Virus, Don Callis, is our other commentator. They are both doing it. And I do like Styles much more in a two-man team than by himself.
Yeah, because, I mean, the thing about Joey Styles is always that he could pull off being, you know, being the Bane commentary and being the straight man, but, you know, he also had to do color commentary himself. But as soon as you brought in Cyrus, like, I think Cyrus and Joey Styles at Anarchy Rules is probably one of my favorite things about ECW, just, again, the constant references to The Office and, you know, oh, Joey, you don't know about The Office? Oh, I left such and such in The Office, and Joey Styles is not selling it whatsoever. But yeah, in this pay-per-view, I thought they were really great. It's before Cyrus really gets, I guess, kind of annoying and gets really into the whole network angle where he can still be, you know, he can still joke around about The Office, he can still be jovial. You know, earlier in the pay-per-view, they're talking about Paul Heyman. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, me and Paul Heyman, we built this company from the ground up. You know, it's not true, but it's hilarious. It's easily one of my favorite things about this pay-per-view.
Then Awesome goes out. He grabs Spike by the overalls, lifts him up, and tosses him over the rail. Then he dives into him over the rail, into the crowd, more to the chairs, I guess. Joey is still decrying this, wants the match stopped, but Cyrus insists that we want a final and logical conclusion, which I like that terminology.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, also the two, like, the build-up for these two wasn't really as expensive as you would expect when someone gets a title shot, because, I mean, that's the other thing. It's not just comeuppance for knocking his girlfriend's two front teeth out. He's actually getting a title shot here. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about, you know, the reshuffling and finding different main events, that's kind of one of the things that I guess goes along with it, is that, oh, you want a title shot? Well, we don't really need rhyme or reason. It's just, we'll give you maybe like a one episode setup and then you go to it. That was kind of, you know, something that Paul Heyman did quite a bit. And I think the setup for this works, and but I think it adds, you know, another level to the match where you do want to root for Spike Dudley, because imagine if, you know, little Spike Dudley, the giant killer, can actually, you know, can he actually do this? Can he actually take down Mike Awesome and become ECW champion?
Mm-hmm. So we get back in the ring and Awesome hits a slingshot splash, does a very casual cover, and Spike kicks out of it, surprising Joey. Then immediately Spike is clotheslined down, nailed pretty hard in the face, actually, by that clothesline. He tries an Awesome Bomb. For those who don't know, that's a Razor's Edge, basically. Does he run with it a little bit? Is it sort of like a running power bomb, or is it just, does he just stand up and do it? I forget.
It depends on where he's doing it from, because, you know, he can run a little bit when he's in the ring, but it's also something that he'll do from the top rope, or like from the ring to outside of the ring into the table. So it really depends on,
yeah, well, those who
exactly
don't know
his position within the ring. Mm-hmm.
Those who don't know what a Razor's Edge is, basically you hold the guy over your shoulders up really high, and then you do sort of a power bomb type thing, only you drop him instead of, you know, holding on to him for that. Anyway, so, but he is not able to do that. In fact, Spike hammers him in the head, and then head scissors him over the top rope. He dives onto him and then hits an acid drop, which is basically an RKO, but you're running. He usually does it on the turnbuckles, where he runs up the turnbuckles and then turns around and then does it. So, that was my place. Oh, yes, he drops Awesome's face onto the rail. One thing that I noticed is that the crowd did not, like, I expected them to sort of be more super into Spike's comeback here than they were. They were kind of mild a little bit, and I don't know if that's just the ECW crowd being just sort of more into the, you know, the brutal physical Mike Awesome, or if it was just the you know... I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that, or did you notice that, or am I way off? Or
Well, I think also, too, it's the beginning of the match. I think a lot of people don't really know what to expect because, like, you know, again, you have Mike Awesome, who's a huge hunk of a man, you know, just coming out to little tiny Spike Dudley. Like, I don't know if they necessarily knew what to expect. Was it going to be a total, you know, total annihilation? Was it going to be like a 2-second match? Coming into it and not seeing it, like, I mean, I'm trying to remember the first time I watched it, you know, knowing that I knew coming into it that obviously this was going to be, you know, a 14-15 minute match, and knowing a little more about Spike Dudley, knowing that he would be, you know, kind of holding his own and just taking as much punishment as possible. I think maybe their reticence to get into it might come from that. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, this is Awesome is clearly someone who could brutally murder Spike Dudley if he wanted to, like, just absolutely destroy him. So I guess maybe waiting for some, like, a bigger comeback. So I don't know, maybe that's something that might kind of explain away that. Yeah. Honestly, I've given up, and I gave up a long time ago trying to understand ECW crowds. So I don't know if I'm exactly the person to overanalyze.
Well, they're more invested in it later. I just kind of thought, like, you know, that Awesome had done enough to, you know, this was like Spike's first bout of hope here, and it was something that fell flat. Maybe it was just the idea that the fans probably knew that Spike wasn't winning. So, you know, maybe that was, you know, maybe there's something to that. I don't know. But then Spike steps onto Awesome's back. He hits him with a chair a few times. Or sort of jumps up on his back and then and comes down while slamming the chair down. Then Spike rolls into the ring and grabs his knee. And I don't know if he injured his knee while he jumped and landed awkwardly, or it even seemed like he did it as he rolled his way into the knee. And then he limps for a while. Tries a dive and sort of falls short, and Awesome sort of catches him. And then I later discovered that this knee injury actually kept him out for most of 2000.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the knee injury is kind of hard to pinpoint. There's, but you can tell when he's got Mike Awesome kind of draped over the railing and he's trying to get him on the first time, he slipped really awkwardly onto the floor. That's okay. When he starts again hitting him with that chair shot.
Yes.
I think that was kind of to make up for something that he had planned to do that didn't quite go as well.
Sure.
And he could have even, like, turned it or twisted it at that point, just because it's such a tiny thing, but it looks so awkward. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he sells, or, well, not really selling because his knee is really hurt, but, you know, the knee's hurt for a bit, and then he sort of just, you know, seems to go through it and doesn't really, I don't notice it affecting the match at all. So, you know, it's a pretty, impressive effort to plow through it without it, you know, being super noticeable. But obviously a shame for him for that to happen and for him to, you know, lose the year during that. So then Awesome tosses Spike in, heads to the top rope. Spike meets him at the top and hits a Hurricanrana, but then Awesome pops up right away and nails him down with a hard clothesline. Gets a big splash for two. Then charges into the corner but runs into Spike's boots. The same thing happens twice again. Then Spike comes off the top and lands a double stomp. And now the crowd's getting a little bit more amped into the action. Spike then grabs a chair outside, but then Awesome boots it into his face. And then Awesome nails a chair to Spike's head and then does more taunting in the ring. I will say, you know, going through it, I feel like there's I didn't feel like Awesome really was being a super huge bully here. It was more that he happened to be a much bigger guy than Spike, obviously, and was trying to win the match, but I didn't feel like Awesome was as much of a jerk as he could have been. And I don't know if that's just I was thinking that didn't really fit into the character, but given that he attacked Spike's girlfriend, I guess it's really not true. I don't know if you have any if that makes sense to you, if you feel like he did enough and I'm just missing it.
Yeah, well, I think, again, we've already addressed the maybe not as great storytelling that comes from matches like these. But I don't know. I actually didn't mind that. I think if you take into consideration that, you know, he probably could have known to be maybe a little more ginger with Spike about his knee, because, again, Spike didn't really do anything to be selling any injury. Plus, who knows, any kind of verbal exchanges that went on. But I think the great thing about this match is that he didn't do that. That he's not overselling that, you know, he's just this big, tough guy who could, you know, end this whenever he wants, because the fact is he's wrestling him, he's doing all of his moves, he's putting him through tables, he's just, you know, being absolutely vicious with him. But Spike still won't go down, so he has to start wrestling him like he would a bigger man instead of, you know, just tossing him around like a rag doll and getting the pin in like 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. So I think that kind of maybe elevates this match for me a little more above kind of like your run-of-the-mill David and Goliath match, because there's almost a sense of respect, because, you know, he's the guy you can't put down. He's the killer, you know. He's going to take, you know, umpteen brutal shots. He's going to be, you know, absolutely broken in bed, but he's not going to go down. So you have to start changing the way that you do approach the match and wrestling him like you would someone who's maybe on par with your size, but just doing, you know, little things here and there. Because obviously, as much as Mike Awesome can pick up someone like Masato Tanaka, and he does have that kind of strength, he's not going to be able to do the same things where he can just, you know, put a little Spiky over his shoulder and cart him around and toss him, you know, out into the crowd as opposed to tossing him into the guardrail. So I think that's one of the things that I actually do end up enjoying and taking away from this match a lot more, is just that he does have to make that change, that it is wrestled differently than you just throwing him around and getting him in 2 seconds. Because Spike really does kick out a few times where he really just doesn't have any right to. So I think that could be what you're saying, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Awesome has a cut on his forehead, which Joey calls a laceration, and then Cyrus says that throwing around big words is his gimmick. So gimmick infringement by Styles there. Awesome springboards off the ropes and jumps onto Spike behind the rail. Sort of slips on the wet floor.
Oh yeah, that
very impressive leap though.
It is. That spot made me a little uncomfortable when you watch it, because the floors in this place are not meant to be landed on whatsoever. You know, there's never any padding around the ring, obviously, because that wouldn't be very extreme. But the way he falls onto the back of his head, it's like that is going to do more damage than, you know, Spike Dudley hitting him in the head with a chair. You know, you can do that a little safer, but, I mean, coming down so hard, being such a big man, coming down so hard on that concrete, that made me wince.
Yeah, they're in a Boutwell Auditorium in Birmingham, Alabama, by the way, which is which was the home of the Alabama territory for at least through the 80s, and that ended toward the end of the 80s. But so a longtime venue for professional wrestling is my point, but not meant for jumping off of the top of the ring and going past the guardrail, apparently. But they were okay. The announcers tout Awesome size and athleticism in particular, then take a little dig at Hulk Hogan, a guy who never left his feet, according to them. Then Awesome stalks the ring for a bit. He and Jones grab a table on the other side of the ring, set it up. Then Awesome goes back around the ring to grab Spike, who is bleeding. And clearly lifeless, but Spike is able to land a low blow and then sends Awesome into the table with the acid drop, which gets a big pop. At this point, the Awesome's first time in serious jeopardy in the match, but the announcers play up how difficult it would be, the challenge that Spike now has, even if Awesome is incapacitated, he has to actually drag him into the ring. And they spend a decent amount of time talking about that. And then after Spike chokes him with the cables, nails him with a chair shot, then jumps off the top and hits another chair shot, screaming like an animal. After all of this, then Spike just sort of grabs him and casually tosses him in. Just kind of like a funny like thing of the commentators and the wrestlers not being on the same page. Not that they could be, but it's just sort of like, oh, yeah, that didn't quite go how, you know, you thought it might. So,
yeah. Just to go back to Spike Dudley putting Mike Awesome through that table.
Sure.
Yeah, you go back and watch it, and you realize that Mike Awesome was kind of lucky to be put through that table, because when Spike lands, he lands so awkwardly, it's just entirely like coming down on that concrete. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's one of those things that you watch back, and it's like, it's supposed to have incapacitated Mike Awesome, but also just like, Dudley, how are you walking? Like, right. Isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, I was kind of thinking, like, I was kind of expecting more like brutality in this match, but Spike does go through like five tables and takes, you know, a bunch of different, you know, different big moves. So, you know, he certainly, you know, even in a match that, and maybe I was just, I don't know why I would have expected more. I mean, there was plenty, but it was still, you know, even in a match like this, he takes a lot of bumps and, you know, and obviously the physical toll of that, he didn't have a long, well, I guess he did sort of have, he had a fairly long career, but, he retired fairly young, and which probably, you know, better than having to wrestle in your 40s. But, you know, that certainly takes the physical toll, probably especially on a smaller guy who's, you know, constantly being hit by guys who are bigger or even much bigger than he is.
Yeah, like you watch some of the, well, you watch pretty much any Spike Dudley match, and it is just the things that he'll go through. You know that he is going to end up doing something absolutely brutal. Like when, like later on when he got into WWE, there's one spot in, we'll call it one of the ladder matches. I think it was the last one. The one had Rhino run in and
yeah,
save.
Yes,
WrestleMania 17, where he gets suplexed onto the ramp, and it's not just, you know, a nice ramp. It's one of the ones that was illuminated from the bottom. Maybe that was a little better because it had more give, but it sounds just disgusting. So, I mean, even towards the tail end before he retires, especially, you know, in TNA, because there aren't many limits on the growth that's all through in TNA, but he was still continuing to be that guy who's going to, no matter his size, just take the worst bumps that you can think of.
Definitely. So, and then speaking of that, there is a after they get back in the ring, Spike tries another acid drop, but then Awesome is able to hold on to him and then toss Spike into the table on the other side of the ring, in which Spike lands on the back of his head, pretty hard on that one. They set up another table in the ring. The ref clearly asks Spike if he wants the match to be stopped, and Spike says no. Awesome sets up the power bomb, but that is countered into an acid dropped attempt, which ends up turning into a big clothesline from Awesome. Then Awesome lifts him up by the shirt, places him on the table, and heads to the top. Spike pops up, tries to fight him up there, but then Awesome gets the super awesome bomb to win the match. Gets a big pop for obviously a spectacular spot, and that's the end of the match.
Yeah, that went quickly.
It's 15 minutes. I mean, it is. It flows well. It makes sense. It's built well, and it's an effective match. Like I said, I think I would have enjoyed it more if Mike Awesome had seemed more nefarious than he was. if he had just seemed a little bit more wicked, a little bit more just like of a guy who kind of got under your skin, as opposed to just, I mean, obviously he's a big, fearsome man and that's impressive. But if the, you know, if he had brought that out a little bit more, I would have been more into it. But it's certainly, you know, it's a decent way to pass the time for sure.
There's a constant debate that I have with my boyfriend. Because obviously I've watched this match, you know, many, many times. He's watched with me. It's one of my favorite matches. He loves this match. One of the things that he says, where I feel that, you know, it is enough, I enjoy this match to the extent where I wouldn't necessarily add anything or take away. But he kind of has the opposite take on it, where he feels that it could have been elevated to an even greater match had there been almost a glimmer of hope for Spike. Like, there was one moment where, you know, you mentioned earlier where he's just making these maniacal faces, but if he had done, just grabbed a chair and, you know, just started wailing, like, if there was just one moment of vulnerability from Mike Awesome where it gives you that hope that, oh my God, maybe Spike can do this. Maybe Mike Awesome isn't going to be walking away from this interview as a champion. So I think it's really interesting that, you know, that's the side of the debate that, you know, I'm used to when you're saying, you know, maybe it's to the opposite where Mike Awesome is just, you know, even this, you know, even scarier in the ring than he is, which I don't know how that's possible.
Well, what I mean is not necessarily he should be more fearsome. What I mean is he should be more of a jerk. He should be more of a bully. He should be more like, you know, talking trash and disparaging Spike. And in being cocky and, you know, and being more, you know, like a guy who you want to see get his comeuppance. That's kind of what I mean. I don't mean it more like from a physical, you know, from a physical standpoint, the match was, you know, I feel like what it should have been. It's more from a, from just being, you know, not a nice person. I feel like Mike Awesome could have amped that up a little bit.
Yeah, I think you're also too expecting a lot from Mike Awesome, who's not exactly known for his personality.
Obviously it's just limitations of the performer or what they were trying to do, or you know, there's a lot of things to that. I'm not saying that, you know, it's just one of those things that separates like a good match from a great one, you know, in my opinion. Or at least, you know, how I connect with something emotionally or whatever.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Not trying to make fun of your match or anything, because, you know, exactly, you know.
No, it's okay. I am, anyone who read my recent column about the Hacked show a few days ago, I do have a very big love for Spike Tenney. It's not something that I keep to myself, so it's okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Listen, you're fine. You disagreed with me about Brock Lesnar, so I'm gonna.
we all have our things. It's okay.
We do. It is. So
I watch TNA every single week, so obviously there's a big difference in opinion for a lot of things.
Well,
as many worse as I give it.
We'll get into that. That leads to one of our Twitter questions. We'll hit this one first, then we'll talk about a little bit about what Mike and Spike were up to after this match, and then we'll go into the rest of Twitter questions. But
okay, sure.
The first one is from Alejandro Lopez, who is at @I_M_ALO. Somebody who I am not familiar with. I don't believe he's ever tweeted me before, but he said, talk about Spike's appearance on Impact Live, the wedding itself, and talk about your favorite wrestling wedding. So I have not watched Impact in a couple years, maybe. So I watched the wedding itself and another segment where Spike and Bully Ray and Taz and Tommy Dreamer are getting ready for the wedding. So for those who might be listening far into the future and don't know what we're talking about the Bully Ray Brooke Hogan wedding in TNA in early 2013. And the wedding, of course, is, as most wrestling weddings, probably all of them, is interrupted by some shenanigans. It does not go off. It does not. It goes off without a hitch, I guess, because they did not get married, I believe.
No, I can safely say that they have not been married in the state of Florida.
Yeah.
But no, this actually, I guess this is the best time to talk about it. This is probably my favorite episode of TNA so far. Like, I've watched a lot of TNA. There are a lot of things that I do not care for. But I felt kind of, it's a shame that you didn't get to watch the whole show, because just on the whole, there was a lot of great development, a lot of great exposition from, of all people, Hulk Hogan. I'm kind of in the, I guess, the lonely side of things, where I think that actually what is going on with Hulk Hogan, what's happened in this entire storyline with his daughter, and sorry, I have to simply be talking about TNA, and it took me a long time to get weaned off of just calling him Bubba. But as far as the progression of their relationship, because just for a little bit of backstory, I guess for you and for people who don't watch Impact on a regular basis like I have to, when it started out, they, you know, there were hints, like, it was Tara walking in to Brooke Hogan's office because Brooke Hogan has, for some reason, been put on the show in the first place. She's in charge of the Knockouts division. So Tara walks into the office, and her and Bully Ray have been sitting on the couch. And, you know, they stand up, and she's adjusting her shirt, and they're kind of hinting here and there that they're an item. But then Hulk Hogan starts getting into it with Bully Ray. Bully Ray denies it, you know, multiple times. He denies that there's anything going on between the two, and then it turns into kind of this betrayal of Hulk, where, you know, Hulk expresses that, you know, we get a lot of this businesses, which are terrible, but are used so often during this entire thing. But you get kind of this great vulnerability for Hulk Hogan that I guess we're not really used to seeing, because, you know, the mythos of Hulk Hogan is so great, and the more he talks about himself, the greater he becomes, you know, in his own mind. You see this, you know, this absolute legend of wrestling. Like, not many people have hit the heights that he have. I would say that, you know, outside of Andre the Giant, but probably for different reasons. As far as wrestling and pop culture goes, you know, he was the first one to really hit that great height. So when he starts getting into things with Bully Ray, he's admitting that, you know, he feels betrayed by the lie. He feels betrayed by someone who has been his companion in this business. But someone who he had come to trust as a friend, and it's his only daughter. So, you know, here they are running around behind his back. They're lying about it. And then he shows this great moment of vulnerability, even within this past episode when he and Sting are sitting in his office talking about it, and he's showing him pictures of, you know, Hulk and Weevil, Brooke Hogan, and he's talking about all of the tragedies and all the things that he and Sting have gone through, and then he and Bully Ray have gone through just being a part of the wrestling industry, and how he's always tried to protect her from those things and protect her from seeing kind of the darker aspect of it. And then here she is, kind of, you know, she's in charge of the Knockouts division. She's, you know, fully immersed in it. And here she's getting involved in someone who's right there with them. So there's a lot of pathos with Hulk Hogan going on right now that I find incredibly interesting. I think the only thing that kind of brings it down is the fact that, I mean, Brooke Hogan has the charisma and charm of a dead fish. Unfortunately, she kind of brings everything down. But there's a lot of great work, a lot of great conversations between Hulk Hogan and even Bill Ray, who's doing something that, you know, he's never done before, because he's the angry guy who shouts stuff. Like, there's not really a lot of character depth when you go through, we'll call it, most of his career, really. So here, you know, you've got people, even Sting, all people just kind of hitting on this emotional vulnerable role. And I think it's probably one of the best things going on, definitely on wrestling television today, but kind of in wrestling in general. When as soon as you get away from the physical aspect and when you get back to that storytelling, I think what they're doing is absolutely brilliant. I know a lot of people probably disagree, and I'm probably being way too into it, but I mean, that is kind of my job, reviewing Impact. So as far as this wedding goes, there was, I don't know how many of the backstage segments that you got to see. Did you get to see, because it shows up three times, there are three backstage segments. The first one at the beginning of the show, he walks in and I kind of have that market moment where my head explodes and I kind of can't really function. And then later on, there's one featuring him, Tommy Dreamer, and believe it, where Joseph Park comes into them. Again, Joseph Park is one of the better things and one of the reasons I will point to for why people should be putting up with the things that go along with watching Impact Wrestling. And then later on, you've got that Paz kind of interjecting. You've got that little like mini ECW reunion. How much of those did you actually get to see?
I saw the one with Taz. I didn't see the other ones. I read your recap of it, so I knew, you know, I basically knew the other things that happened, but the only one I actually saw was Taz.
Sorry, my mic up. Okay. Yes.
And it was good. I thought the one thing I thought I want to touch on that you mentioned is I thought Hogan did a nice job of conveying the concerned but still proud father pretty well, you know, in that last segment. I didn't really see the other ones that you mentioned, but I thought that was he did it in a more subtle way than I'm used to Hogan expressing himself.
Yeah, absolutely. It comes down to kind of him being self-referential in what he's done in his career, and just, you know, the Hulk Hogan that we know, you know, say your prayers, eat your vitamins, that kind of thing. He constantly reiterates that he always does the right thing. And so they kind of play into it with Brooke Hogan coming up the ramp and, you know, constantly looking behind her, just to seeing if he's coming. And then, you know, she takes a few deep breaths to kind of steel herself against the fact that, you know, everything that has happened in the past few episodes could have irreparably damaged the relationship that she has with her father. And of course the crowd sees Hogan before she does. So you've got this great moment where you know that he's going to show up, but it's still kind of plays on that emotional aspect. I had an emotional reaction to it. I'm not going to lie. I was completely into the show pretty much from beginning to end, almost. And I will say, because Ace is an ace, one of those things that I will point to not be watching Impact right now, because it's kind of ridiculous. But yeah, absolutely. There's this new side of Hulk Hogan that we're seeing that I think is so great. And part of me says, you know, I can't wait until this is ruined, but I'm really hoping that this is the direction that they go in. But I guess to get back to Spike Dudley, in my column for the previous week, you know, when I was speculating on exactly what would happen, and just, you know, I said best case scenario, Spike Dudley shows up in a TEDx tuxedo and makes me the happiest girl in the world, then all of a sudden, you know, here I am watching, and Spike Dudley kind of like bursts through the door. It's fantastic, and I think, you know, I hope you do get to go back and at least watch those segments, because you can also see, just as when we're talking about emotion and things, you can really tell how genuinely happy everyone is to be there. I mean, and it's because Bully Ray has been going through this emotional thing where he's, you know, he kind of smiles like Nick Saban, like, I think this is how humans are supposed to smile, you know, whole thing with Brooke Hogan, because again, dead fish just gives nothing. But you see, as soon as he comes in, as soon as Spike Dudley comes in, you know, his face lights up, Tommy Dreamer comes in, everyone just, they're so happy. They go to the next one. You know, they're joking around. They're talking with Joseph Park / possibly, probably Abyss. And, you know, they're having fun. And that's one of the things that I always point Impact as sorely lacking. They've always done that. Like, I mean, you look at someone, or even if you'd like with Samoa Joe and the Pope, like, it's just, it's people, it's kind of like Ring of Honor, where It is people who are just angry and they just want to shout stuff and they just want to murder each other and no one's having fun. No one looks like they are genuinely happy to be there. And I think maybe that's one of the reasons I connected with this episode so much is, you know, you see these people who are just supposed to be angry and they're, you know, these aggressive people who resolve everything through physical violence. That's, you know, bottom line, the point of the show. But, you know, Tommy Dreamer just kind of always looks happy to be wherever he is. That's just Tommy Dreamer. But, you know, when later on, when Spike Dudley marches on the ramp and he takes, you know, he kind of hurries Mickey James. Mickey James can't catch up, which is hilarious. But, you know, he gets there and Bubba sees him and you can see that genuine smile where they just rub each other and, you know, that hug lasts a little longer. I thought it was fantastic. It's something that made me really happy to see, especially when you consider that most ECW reunions are just, you know, when coming up here in Canada, and it's just, they're still trying to do the same thing. They still want to, you know, hit each other with barbed wire. They still, you know, want to lose massive amounts of blood. And it's not, they're still kind of rehashing the things that brought them into people's lives in the first place, where, you know, I don't need to see that. I don't need to see aging wrestlers still trying to do the things that they were doing, especially when, you know, they're so dangerous and kind of past that point in wrestling where I don't think we necessarily even need that anymore. I'm not a big fan of, I say this as a fan of ECW, but I'm not, you know, actually a huge fan of, you know, the death matches of blood and hitting each other with light tubes. It's just, it's ridiculous. It takes away from the things that I really do love and the things that I connect to with wrestling, which is, you know, I can watch a great match and I can love it for its physicality and I can love it for the technical wrestling. But as soon as you start getting into the storytelling aspect and you start, you know, building the layers of the match and why it's happening and the storytelling within the ring, that's something that I really enjoy. And, you know, a lot of these people can't do it anymore. They're just here to be angry and hit each other with stuff, and that's not something that should really be going on, in my opinion, you know, for these guys. So to see, you know, Tommy Dreamer, like the legend of ECW, you know, kind of when you think hardcore, you think Tommy Dreamer, but, you know, just to see these guys.
Well, I think Mick Foley, but.
Well, yes, obviously, as far as like ECW goes. But yes, I got kind of derailed to say Mick Foley.
That's okay. It was a good rant. I enjoyed it.
My brain goes to very happy places when it comes to Mick Foley.
Yeah.
But you know, he's another one. Like, I don't want to see Mick Foley wrestle. I think he's put himself through enough. I mean, the guy can barely walk. He's been through surgeries and recoveries. He doesn't have an ear. You know, I want to see him in a happy place. And to see these guys who are just there, you know, I mentioned in the film, just to see them there, you know, just being happy to see each other, getting paid to not spill blood everywhere. I think it's a really great thing, and I hope that's something that, I guess, fans of ECW or even people who watch Impact have to take away from that. This is something that should really be appreciated when, you know, you've got guys that they're like, I guess, we talked about Steve Corino before. I don't know if I want to go down that path. But I mean, even guys like Sabu. Sabu's old. Sabu should not be doing the things that Sabu has been basically doing forever. You know, but he's still out there. He's still wrestling in front of crowds of like four people in the middle of nowhere, because sometimes that's just all people need to do. And I think there are a lot of different motivations that maybe, I guess, would be better off discussed on another podcast as far as that goes. But yeah, I hope people kind of take away what a great thing it is seeing them happy. I mean, when was the last time you really saw Bully Ray happy? I mean, you don't watch Impact, but I can say as someone who does, never. He's the guy who shouts stuff. So, I mean, to have Spike Dudley come back, to have Tommy Dreamer show up, you know, WWE and TNA in the matter of a week is, I guess, again, kind of filled in, or just goes back to my point that Tommy Dreamer will go anywhere and do anything. But no, it's great. And I think that was a really great emotional layer that they added to the wedding, because wrestling weddings don't always go well. Wrestling weddings aren't supposed to, you're not supposed to have any kind of emotional connection to them. They're just supposed to be something that happens that sets something else up. Like even in TNA, when Jeff Jarrett and Karen Jarrett renewed their vows, you know, it's Jeff Jarrett, so automatically it's going to be awful. But it's just.
Well, wait now. Well, okay, you continue, and then I will rebut that. But
as far as Impact goes,
I found Jeff and Karen Jarrett to be very charming, actually.
See, I think it's mostly Karen, because Karen is lovely. I had the chance to meet her at wrestling, at Lockdown 2011. She was amazing. She's just absolutely stunning in person. I don't know how you were married to someone who has so much pull in TNA and you end up looking not anywhere near as beautiful as you do in person. You know, she looks good on TV, but in person she's incredible.
Yeah.
But no, she's great. And I think a lot of the charm probably come from her. It was actually kind of adorable because she was saying that she's constantly worried that people are going to have the reaction. And because you're talking, it's amazing. You're so nice. You know, you play such a bitch on TV. And she's like, oh, good. You know, she gets so excited that people have this kind of negative reaction to her because it's something that obviously she practiced and worked so hard on. So a lot of that charm, I think, did come from Karen Jarrett. I will also say that one of my favorite TNA moments did happen during that vow renewal ceremony. Again, it comes back to just showing humor and just showing some fun things. You know, you've got Kurt Angle, who's been super serious through this whole thing, and obviously he's angry for a great many reasons, but just the look on his face when he pulls out the axe, it's great. You can tell he's just having so much fun, and that's something that I respond to a lot better than I've got an axe and I'm going to kill you. You've got an axe. It's obviously fake. You're obviously not going to hit someone with it, but when you pull out an axe and you've got that smile on your face, and yeah, that's pretty great. But I've digressed entirely. As I was saying, just everything that surrounded that that ECW, even Taz, even that, it's added such great emotion to the wedding, where even though you knew something was going to happen, it was still really enjoyable to watch and take as an actual wedding.
Yeah. I think you said it all, pretty much. I will add that Spike Dudley did look very dapper in a tux.
He did. It's kind of weird to see him outside of, like, overalls or even...
Yeah. The short hair and the tux, that does a lot for him. That makes him seem less creepy to me than he does during the 2000 match. But
any Spike Dudley outside of overalls kind of weirds me out. Even during the review, Guilty as Charged, he does a promo early on in the back, and he cuts a promo on Mike Awesome, and he's like pants and a sweater and a fanny pack, and it's like, what is this? This is... Right, I'm not comfortable with this at all. Just go put on your overall. It's weird.
Yes, go put on your costume. You look, yeah, it's like it's like seeing like a teacher like in like regular clothes or something.
Yeah, or like seeing a police officer. Like,
right, exactly. Yeah. So, other Twitter questions from Ole Wrestling. Ole Anderson at Ole Wrestling is the Twitter handle. Was Mike Awesome the least over ECW champion of all time? And I would say no. I feel like he was pretty strongly over. I feel like the decline kind of happened after that. I kind of feel like Justin Credible was sort of the nadir of the ECW title.
Yeah, that's I would say it's hard when you're comparing ECW champions, because when you come you know, when you come into it to kind of the beginnings, a lot of the champions were already pretty well established names. So, you know, they already had something that the crowd could, you know, connect to, could recognize. There was something already behind them. So, you know, Mike Austin didn't have a lot of that, but I would say he was absolutely a lot more over than someone like, you know, Jesse.
Yeah, and more effective in that role, and had better matches, and the crowd just responded to him better.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I would say he was even more over than someone like Masato Tanaka. I mean, but the two of them, you know, it's been how many years, and we're still talking about three of the main matches that they had. I mean, that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's still pretty damn over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, and then from Eric Darcy, I am Darcy, kind of a similar question. What signs could you see that ECW was on the downswing in this main event? And I feel like it's not necessarily here other than Spike's obviously kind of just like a one time, not really a main eventer, just kind of thrown in there. And not that he didn't belong or that the story didn't work or anything like that, but he's obviously not necessarily a guy you would conventionally, he's more of a, we don't necessarily have anything, so let's do this. This is pretty good. This will work, rather than like we have a big engrossing story kind of thing. So maybe that's the only sign I would say.
Yeah, well, and also too, I think maybe it kind of shows the trust that Paul Heyman would have in them, because you still got Rob Van Dam and Sabu on this card. Like, I mean, this isn't just all, you know, just incredible and Steve Corino and Dusty Rhodes running around rubbing his elbow on people's foreheads. You know, you still got something that is going to be a huge pay-per-view draw. Like, when you talk about what events in ECW, like I said, a lot of the main matches didn't happen necessarily in the main event, especially when you've got someone like Rob Van Dam. We can talk about Rob Van Dam, you know, in hindsight, but at the time, there were so many people who were watching just for him. He was one of the best ones out there doing some of like the craziest stuff that people had seen. You know, so when you still have, like, yeah, you were kind of rehashing RVD and Sabu because that's been done a million times, but it's still something that's good enough that people are going to want to see. So to put Spike Dudley and Mike Awesome in the main event, I think, yeah, it speaks to kind of that reshuffling, but again, a certain amount of trust that, yeah, this is going to be good. This isn't, even if it's just a one-time thing for Spike Dudley, this is going to be a good enough match that it's maybe not necessarily going to carry the pay-per-view, but it's still going to be good enough to have that main event spot. Like, I mean, I can even, when you get back to the tag match is something that probably could have easily main evented this pay-per-view as well, because you had the Impact Flairs versus Tommy Dreamer and Raven.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something, you know, I guess the Impact Flairs were popular, they're much, for them personally, but you know, they're popular enough. And you have Tommy Dreamer and Raven, you know, they have such a storied history with their feud, you know, coming together and being tag champions, everything that had happened and been built up on TNN. You know, that's something that, again, could have very easily main evented this pay per view, but we have Mike Awesome and Spike Dudley.
Yeah. So after this match, Mike Awesome, he's ECW champion for a few more months. Then as ECW champion, jumps to WCW, then loses the ECW title, has to do one more match in ECW, loses the title to Taz, who is in WWF at the time. And then Taz loses it to Tommy Dreamer. And then immediately Dreamer is challenged by Just Incredible, and Just Incredible beats him for the title to kick off the Just Incredible era, which we all remember so fondly.
If you're going to point to something as the beginning of the end, I think that entire string of events.
Yeah. I get what they were trying to do. I like the notoriety of, the WWF wrestler beating the WCW wrestler in the ECW ring for the title. I get that, but it didn't really – I don't think it really – worked the way they wanted to. And then, and I get the idea of giving Dreamer his moment and then robbing of him and then the heat that you get from that. but I think that all kind of, you know, the magic of Paul Heyman didn't quite work on that occasion.
Yeah, well, I think that was problematic for a number of reasons. I mean, at that point, WWF/WWE, they were already, you know, they were already working with ECW on a lot of things, and they were already helping them out, whereas, you know, WWE wasn't necessarily doing it at that point.
Sure.
And again, the problematic thing of, you know, Taz comes back and he does it, it's just, I don't know, that one time makes me sad, because it's just, it's such a short match, and it kind of doesn't really do justice to all of the things Michaelson had accomplished. But I guess he's going to, you know, kick off to WCW.
Yeah. Plus he was leaving. I don't know what kind of mood he was in to actually do a great match, but.
But then you have Tommy Dreamer winning the belt, and Tommy Dreamer said numerous times he never wanted to be that champion. That's not even something he necessarily wanted. So, I mean, right there, again, you've got problems where you've got this kind of stalwart company man who never really aspired to that, who just wanted to be there, just wanted to be a part of things and wanted to kind of play to whatever was necessary, but didn't need that validation of having the title. And all of a sudden you're like, nope, you're going to go over, you're going to get the belt. As soon as you're going something that has been like pillar of your company, then you know, maybe things aren't so good. And then you have Just Incredible. I will leave it at that.
Yes. Yes. Of course, Awesome was spent WCW as that 70s guy, and I believe the Fat Chick Thriller was the character for a while. So that was certainly not necessarily the creative highlight of his career. And Spike, of course, as we mentioned, was out for most of the year, kind of came back at the end of ECW, and then transitioned to WWE and had kind of interesting career there. It kind of recycled what he had done with the Dudleys in ECW as far as being with the brothers for a while and then eventually feuding with them. And then, if I recall correctly, when there was a period, he turned heel, was Cruiserweight champion, and then was sort of like the almost the boss of the Dudleys. Like, he was the heel directing them for a while. They kind of reversed that normal dynamic. I don't remember the specifics of that, but that always kind of seems interesting to me, at least.
Yeah, well, I think anytime you take something where people are just so completely used to it, because he's done this and he did it for, you know, so many years in ECW, and then he came into it and started doing it again. I think that, again, that role reversal is something that is really interesting and probably should be examined a little more in depth than we're going to do here. But yeah, I thought, you know, he still was that guy who was going to do anything and, you know, get put through anything, get thrown into anything. But yeah, there were a few different things that he did that were really interesting in WWF. But again, I think maybe the Dudleys themselves, aside from Spike, are probably the exception to the rule of ECW guys who came to WWE, where you just kind of, you know, they came, known, recognized, they just kind of floated around, but they never really kind of recaptured exactly what made them so great that WWE would want to bring them over. Like, I mean, Taz definitely didn't, Sandman didn't, but I think as far as the Dudleys themselves go, because they did have those great, you know, those great TLC matches, and, you know, they were there for so long, they were able to kind of keep that momentum going, and they were able to keep that momentum going enough that they could bring that to TNA. It was something that TNA came to rely on. I don't think that necessarily happened in Spike Dudley's transition from ECW to WWE to TNA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Well, I think we've just about covered it, unless you have anything else you want to add.
Maybe not so much. I would say definitely go check out that Impact report. I do write for Holzerman over at the Wrestling Blog, Walls of Jericho Hall at blogspot.com. Definitely, if you want to learn more about this episode that I have talked so glowingly about, you can watch the replay on Spike TV. Unfortunately, you will not see the part where Hulk Hogan is, you know, emotionally telling her and kind of getting his redemption for everything that he said against Bully Ray, to not worry about him and to go check on Bubba, and she responds with, "My boobs are out." Yeah, again, Brooke Hogan, great stuff.
Yeah.
So you won't get to see that part because they cut it out very, very quickly. But yeah, but finally head over to With Leather, obviously With Leather to Brox.com, Best and Worst Impact. You know, check it out, comment. I like comments. You know, it's sometimes watching TNA is not the easiest thing. So, you know, maybe get a little validation in there for everything that I have to put up with outside of this, you know, this one stellar episode. But it is a good, it's always a good discussion over there. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You can follow me on Twitter, I guess, if I'm doing the self-promotion thing.
Yeah, you have a great Twitter name, so.
It's ProGraphLady. So you can check me out there. I will mostly be talking about wrestling or cats. You know, I don't own a cat anymore, but you know, kind of wish I did. So there's some interesting things going on over there. If you ever want to ask questions about Impact or, you know, anything that I've written over at the wrestling blog, you can definitely get a hold of me that way. Also, you know, thank you to the people who did send us questions over to Twitter. Ollie Anderson, Alex, the other one, I'm so sorry, whoever sent that other question, I apologize.
Lita's Baby, and I believe Eric Darcy was the other one.
Yes, how could I forget Lita's Baby?
Yeah.
But yeah, so definitely thank you for people to people for reaching out and sending those over. Is there anything else you would like to go over?
No, I think we're good. Of course, everyone can check out the podcast at WrestleSpective.com or on iTunes or Stitcher. Please leave a comment on or a little review on iTunes and a rating, both preferably, but either one definitely is helpful. I prefer good reviews, but if you honestly don't like the show, you know, I can't tell you not to be honest. So either way, we appreciate that. And on Twitter as well at WrestleSpective, Facebook, we are many places on the internet. Just search WrestleSpective and you will likely find us. So, Danielle, thank you again for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me and letting me ramble on about Spike Dudley for a while.
No problem. Thanks everyone for listening. Check out our sponsors, RuralReels.com and GredenzaPress.com. And until next time, see you later.